Before we begin today's show, we're just under 2 weeks away from UFC 252 in Las Vegas, Daniel Cormier versus Stipe Miocic 3, a trilogy fight to see who's the best UFC heavyweight of all time. We're lucky here at ESPN because every single Monday, Daniel Cormier joins Ariel Helwani for DC and Helwani, the fastest growing podcast on the planet. This Monday, DC and Ariel will preview UFC 252 and discuss everything else going on in the sports world, like DC's beloved Houston Rockets. Just search for Ariel Helwani's MMA show on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast, where we talk about the NBA. We are presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven. Joining me tonight, which we are taping Sunday night, the Bucks-Rockets game is going on. We're going to try to finish this in order to see the end of it. So if there's an all-time classic ending and you came to this podcast on Monday morning to talk all about it, I'm sorry. We're not going to be able to accommodate you. But joining me from Austin, Texas, is former San Antonio Spurs front office man, and good day for the Spurs today, Kurt Goldsberry.
What is up, Brian?
Spurs keep winning.
Spurs here we go.
Now in ninth place.
Here we go.
We'll talk about that later. Joining us from Naples, Florida, is our front office insider, former 20-plus member year of the New Jersey and Brooklyn Nets, Bobby Marks.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
And the Nets had a good day today, too, right?
They did.
I guess, maybe. Well, it depends on who you talk to, right?
They shoved.
Some people who want, I think there's some people who would like to have that pick in the lottery there.
They shoved down that potential Wizards uprising. By beating the Wizards and holding off those hard-charging Wizards. We did get 30 points today from Thomas Bryant. So we had an unfortunate event in Sunday afternoon's Magic game. Magic were winning by 25 points in the fourth quarter. And Jonathan Isaac drove the lane. He basically went to do a jump stop and his left knee buckled. And he had to be taken off by a wheelchair. And Bobby, the reason that I was, you know, I'm very upset by this because Jonathan Isaac is extension eligible. You know, he's been having the best year of his career. And so I often think about guys' contracts. I shouldn't do that, I guess, but I do think about that. And it actually led me to think a lot about the way the Pelicans are handling Zion. But first, Jonathan Isaac, he had a knee sprain. His left knee was sprained back during the season, I think maybe in December or so.
He hurt on New Year's Day.
On New Year's Day, okay. And he had a pretty severe sprain and bone bruise in his left knee. And so sprain means partially torn ligament. That's the definition of a sprain. And I don't know what ligaments were involved, and I don't know whether this injury today, you know, I'm not a doctor, I'm not an orthopedist, I can't tell you. But when you see an area that was coming, it was just when it was injured a few months ago, potentially suffer another injury like this, you kind of just get sick to your stomach, Bobby. And this is why organizationally it's so difficult to make these types of decisions with injuries. And Jonathan Isaac probably rolled the dice a little bit playing in this restart. And this is why players twist in the wind on injuries a little bit.
Well, you're right. I mean, he missed 31 games. I mean, his injury was severe enough that the Magic actually applied for the disabled player exception, him and Al-Farouq Aminu. Aminu was granted that they got denied on the Isaac one because the league had determined that he would be back by mid-June, you know, if Orlando had gotten to an NBA Finals and the season hadn't been, you know, postponed. So you're right. The first thing I thought of, Brian, when he went down was the, you know, extension eligible start in this October. And I give him credit for being on the court. with much at risk there, because he could have easily, and of course the medical, the Orlando medical, you know, department has to clear him here, but he could have, you know, he could have opted out, like, you know, Davis Bertans, who's a free agent. This is a little bit different because he's got another year left, but he's got this potential, this big extension kind of waiting on the horizon. And now we're kind of in a waiting game where this knee go, where this happens with this knee.
Yeah. So there was a number of players who were in his position. I don't know if he was in this group or not, who approached the league before the bubble and requested additional insurance. And said, you know, normally we would all be eligible to sign our extensions on July 1st. I talked about this on a previous pod. Jason Tatum was in this group. Bam Adebayo was in this group. These are guys who would normally be get to offer an extension and could have signed it before next season. And they were like, hey, can you get us some additional insurance here? And the league did get some extra insurance, but it was not the type of insurance that I think they were looking for. But you know, it just illustrates, Kirk, the challenges that so many players had. You know, we've talked about Victor Oladipo a lot. Oladipo has elected to play and has played. But the concerns about injury in this situation, with so much on the line for this sort of strange little restart situation here.
Yeah. I mean, we essentially just went through an entire off season. 140 some days is about the same time as we would go between, say, the end of the finals and opening night of the next season. It was a long break. And, you know, the league is dominated by sports science now. It's the era of load management. And one of the things we've learned is to keep these guys healthy and upright, you have to slowly increase their load and their workloads and not start too fast. But given the nature of this restart, to your point, you know, I think teams did a pretty good job starting slow and getting up, but I think we're turning up the volume pretty quickly right now. I mean, the playoffs start in 2 weeks, so guys want to be in peak condition.
Well, and then there's also teams that are fighting for a lot going on immediately.
Exactly. So it's not like a normal beginning of the season in that sense. It is, no, we're not just kind of going through October, November. This is the equivalent of what would be normally be March and April. We're fighting for our playoff lives. We're fighting for seeding. We want to get in peak condition and playing at a high level now. And that's risky when you've just taken 4 months away from the game.
Yeah, so I think the reason I brought this up is because of the way the Pelicans are handling Zion. You know, I talked to several people who are, you know, just NBA fans that I know who were pretty upset. I mean, this one guy I talked to was like borderline angry that Zion only played 15 minutes in that opening night. And especially since the game was skin tight down the stretch.
Hey, was that Alvin Gentry? Who were you talking to?
I don't know. Maybe I was talking to a guy who had a bet on that game or something. David Griffin, the general manager, came out after the game and explained a little bit that they were going to protect Zion and keep his minutes down the whole time. But, you know, Zion is not on their injury report. So, you know, they are treating him as if he is coming back from injury, but he is not on their injury report. So I cannot make an assumption as to what's going on there. When you watch him play, he clearly is not in condition to compete at the highest level. And Bobby, I actually, you know, as I've watched him play two games, I don't actually think they probably should have played him at all, the way he's playing. In fact, I talked to a scout who said to me he shouldn't be out there right now in the condition he's in. He said to me he's moving worse than he did in summer league last summer when he got hurt in his first or second game. And he, you know, I don't know if that's because he's out of condition or that's because he's got something that they're not discussing, but this is one of the things that the Pelicans have to deal with. This is a guy who has a history of knee injuries and is not right either because of conditioning or because of something else. And this is exactly what happened with Jonathan Isaac, is why these teams are so protective of these young players.
Well, you're right, and I think, and I'm actually surprised, guys, that we haven't seen more injuries so far, just because of the long layoff, and you know, you've had basically a 2 week, mini camp to get back into some type of shape here. And Brian, I'm actually surprised he even played the first two games, to tell you the truth, based on him being away for the team for over a week, and then you know, have to be in quarantine when he came back, and you know, basically being shut down. And you know, the debate is that the minutes, as far as how the minutes were used, right, on Thursday night, that he did not finish the game. And you know, it's different than what Orlando with Indiana did with Victor Oladipo, who they, you know, I guess they said he was on a minutes restriction against Philadelphia, but he played the last 6 minutes of the game and, you know, had an impact. So if you were going to make the argument, you know, well, why didn't he finish? And, you know, that's something that David Griffin and Alvin Gentry has come out, or Alvin Gentry came out and it basically said, ask the medical department. They're the ones who were kind of setting the minutes here. And but yeah, I just well, watch him.
Griff explained that he is a little bit more loose at the start of quarter, I guess, because he can warm up for the first quarter and warm up for the third quarter. I guess that's the rationale there, that whereas if they let him play in the third quarter and then shut him all the way down till the end of the game, that he would stiffen up. I guess that's the explanation he gave.
Yeah, and I think this situation gets magnitude because they had an opportunity to beat Utah Thursday night, and they kind of threw that out the window. And then they get their doors blown off against the Clippers. They weren't even competitive. You had guys not running back on defense. As I said on Saturday, felt like they were playing in the mountains. Right? I mean, like the altitude in Orlando got to them because of their effort level here. And that was the one thing that I was concerned about is. Guys, you know, we saw with Utah against Oklahoma City, we saw with the Pelicans against the Clippers, you know, players that had played these high minutes on Thursday night, what their recovery was going to be, 48 hours later, just because there's so much of the unknown because we've had a 4 month layoff here.
Yeah, we had a couple of overtime games where guys played into the 40 minutes. Yeah. I think Harden played 43 minutes or something in that first game. But, you know, I don't know, maybe the team sort of realizing that Zion wasn't going to be able to play much affected that as well, Kirk. I don't know. I don't know how well it was even communicated to the team.
I talked to one GM and I just asked him, you know, what's your, what are your early reactions to the bubble? And he would quickly say, I can't believe that so many guys are playing 35 minutes or more out there already. So, you know, some people are seeing that and it's crazy. But back to Zion, I think he just played the two worst games of his career. His career is not that old, but he played 15 minutes in the Utah game, did not look great, did not look terrible, but did look terrible in the Clipper game. Played 14 minutes, was 3 of 7, had 3 turnovers, no assists. Remember, he's supposed to be a passer, too. He has 1 assist in these 2 games total. He does not look right. It does not look good. I don't know if I would go so far as to say he shouldn't be out there because I don't know. But
yeah,
something smells fishy here. I don't know what's going on. He does not look like the kid who was dominating the league in March. I mean, this is a guy who was having a coming out party. The Pelicans had really just coalesced into something there. And they did not look good. And to Bobby's point, it was pretty bad. Against the Clippers, they were not running back on defense. I think I know one of the exact plays that you're talking about, Bobby.
Yeah,
I think it was Derek Favors.
Favors and Ingram.
They didn't get across half court, and you hate to see that in any level of play, but you don't really see that in NBA, especially for a team that's trying to get into the playoffs. So if there's one team that's had a really bad couple of games here in Orlando, it's the New Orleans Pelicans.
Well, I'll give you a close second is Sacramento. That's another story for another day. I mean, goodness gracious.
Well, they have been completely snake bit. However, De'Aaron Fox got healthy for their opener and scored 39, and they still couldn't win it. Bobby, what would, you know, we don't know the medical, and the Pelicans have been very adamant to make it clear that they don't think, they've never thought that Zion has a conditioning issue. But what do you do from here? What do you do with Zion? This guy is potentially an MVP type talent, but his physical challenges are going to hold your franchise, the future of your franchise, in that. What do you do?
Well, I mean, in the short term, they've got they've got a game on Monday against Memphis. I mean, their schedule, guys, it's fascinating. I mean, like, I mean, they've got six winnable games here, right? I mean, like, they could easily run the table, but they play Monday against Memphis, and they don't play again until Sacramento on the 6th, which is Thursday. It's one of those rare, like, three-day layoffs. So, I mean, from a conditioning standpoint, it's not like all of a sudden, you know, those 3 days will help. But those 8 or 9 days that he's missed has killed a guy here. So I'm still probably putting him on a short leash here, as far as from a minutes restriction here. You know, maybe he goes from 15 to 20 against Memphis. We'll see how he recovers. In those 3 days, 3 days that they have. I mean, they actually benefit here. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I see it. Is that I'm keeping these, what, as David Griffin said, the short burst. I'm going to probably continue that pattern, and it could throw off as far as what rotations the Pelicans are putting out there. It could hurt. You know, the other thing too is that Derek Favors looks terrible. I mean, no offense, but he looks like he's about 15 pounds heavier than he was when the season ended, and he has a hard time kind of getting up and down the court here. So some of these guys, this is where teams are going to separate themselves as far as what guys were able to do in the last 3-4 months when the season got stopped.
Nick Nurse, did you hear what Nick Nurse said after the game Saturday night? He was feeling himself a little bit because they had a really nice win over the Lakers. And Toronto, Kyle Lowry played just a brilliant game. But Nurse, said, he basically said, the word on the street is that some of these teams were out there playing together and our guys weren't. And he feels that you can, I don't know if he's, I mean, that rumor's out there. Any of us who are talking to guys, believe that there were some teams that were not necessarily following the local quarantine rules. Certainly the Pelicans wouldn't be argued that they were doing that. In fact, there's a couple of teams, I'm trying to dance around this without getting aggregated. But one of the teams who has been strongly accused of it behind the scenes by other teams, I was talking to an executive from that team, and I made a passing reference, not even to like do a gotcha, just a passing reference to that scuttlebutt, and he was very defensive. He got very, very defensive. So it's one of those things that's being, talked about under the radar, just below the radar. And Nurse referenced it in his post-game comments. Although I think the Raptors have had somewhat of a surprise advantage, as I've talked about, by being able to be it together as long as they have. But you definitely can see which teams are gelling faster than the others. Some of them are the teams that have been accused behind the scenes. But, the challenge really now is for the Pelicans, when they come, this is their biggest game, Memphis. They win on Monday against Memphis. Memphis had a brutally hard loss to the Spurs today. So they have to play on the second day of a back-to-back. Zion's got to make the most of those 15 minutes, right, Kirk? I mean, if Zion is – he's got to give him – got to give them a lift in those 15 minutes, because those 15 minutes could be the difference in the game like this.
Yeah. Well, here's a striking stat, because in the 15 minutes against the Jazz, remember the game they lost by two, the Pelicans were minus 16 when Zion played. The next game, Zion plays 14 minutes against the Clippers. The Pelicans were minus 17 in those 14 minutes. Zion hasn't been helping. And if you look at his plus minus, which is not the best stat in the world, But generally speaking, he's a positive player. The Pelicans win basketball games when Zion is out there. So that's another indicator that something's not right. So, yeah, the Memphis game becomes one of the biggest games in the bubble for obvious reasons. You know, it's Monday. It's 5:30. They could reframe the whole thing. But Zion's got to look completely different than he has the last few games. And one other point. You guys were talking about this. What should they do? I don't know. He is a potential MVP, as you said, Brian. And the precedent that came to mind when you guys were talking is Joel Embiid. And he didn't play any NBA games when he was 20 or 21 years old because they knew this guy could be special. They knew he could potentially be an MVP. And they shut him down, historically just shut him down. And I don't know if that's what they should do for Zion, but if they lose that Memphis game, Brian, if they lose that Memphis game and are 0-3 in the bubble and you look at the standings and there's four teams in front of you, the conversation has to happen. Is it time to shut Zion down?
Yeah. And do what then?
Try to get him right. I mean, this is the future of their organization.
Like with Embiid, right? Like, you know, Embiid, you know, there was this the devastating story about how he was drinking a gallon of Shirley Temples with every meal and, you know, why he was injured with that broken foot and wasn't able to work out. And he was living out of the Four Seasons and ordering room service at every meal. That, you know, that he was acting like a 19-year-old. And he truly transformed his body. You know, is that, I mean, is that basically what he's got? Like a lot of young players who 19, 20 have to change their bodies dramatically. That may be what he's got to do, even though they're, the Pelicans have been very careful not to, you know, insult him in any way.
No, and you're right. Players grow into their bodies in the first few years of their career. Embiid's a great example of how to do that right. And Draymond Green's another one. You can continue to get stronger and leaner and better at basketball in your early 20s. The Pelicans need to be thinking about the seasons where Zion is 23, 24, 25, and 26. And how to make sure that he's ready for those seasons. They're not winning the finals this year. It'd be nice if they got to the playoffs. We all want to see Zion. But, man, this is the most important young asset, arguably, in the entire NBA. And they have to treat him with kid gloves, to say the least.
Well, this is to be continued. We're going to be watching this for years. Just put it this way. A week ago, I would not have predicted that this is what we would have been talking about with Zion. I would have thought there was a possibility he wasn't going to play, and we would have been disappointed he wasn't going to play. This isn't what I thought.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
But you brought up Embiid, and even though I know that it feels like we've been talking about the Sixers dealing with stuff for 10 months now, their first game out of the chute, they just picked up right where they left off. They, you know, it was obviously a very high-profile thing that coming out of the bubble, they were going to move Shake Milton in the starting lineup, or at least keep him in the starting lineup because he was there at the stop, and they were going to move Ben Simmons to power forward, and you know there was this idea that they could find a way to capture the best of what they had as a team, that allowed them to be so dominant at times. And they come out and they get beat by an Indiana Pacers team missing two starters. Ben Simmons plays in his new role, plays really below his standard on defense. I just put him on my all defensive team. And TJ Warren, who had the game of his life, but TJ Warren lights Ben Simmons up. I think the stats and info tracking have said he was like 9 of 10 shooting when Simmons is the primary defender. Joel Embiid gets into it with Shake Milton at halftime, I assume about feeding him the ball. And Shake Milton is benched to start the second half. They give up some, I don't know off the top of my head, 42 points in the fourth quarter of that 46. Game. 46. They're just such, this team is so talented. You know, like, you, like I watched the Raptors play the Lakers. Tell me that man for man that the Raptors are more talented. But you watch the Raptors and they get the absolute most out of just about everybody, and the Sixers just don't. And it's mind-boggling, Bobby. And you know, we're one game in, and they play Monday against a Spurs team playing their third game in 4 days. They better win that game. Not because I'm, you know, thinking they're not gonna make the playoffs or anything like that. They're in, but they better start showing that they can get some momentum here. Because I just can't believe how disappointing this team has been.
Well, I mean, they're what we call a paper team, right? They look great on paper. I mean, that's kind of, and they reminded me of like when teams have these great off seasons and we anoint them as the favorite going into the season. Like Philadelphia, we anointed them during the before these seeding games even started because, as you said, they had changed the lineup. They looked dominant in some of these scrimmages, right? There was a new outlook. They weren't going to be playing in front of fans on the road. They were such a terrible road team. And then you revert. Then you go and you play, as you said, a Indiana team that had missed, you know, two key players and had Miles Turner in foul trouble that eventually fouls out, and Victor Oladipo on a minutes restriction, and you give up 46 in the fourth and lose by six. And yeah, I mean, you didn't get much out of outside of Embiid and, you know, Tobias Harris. You know, you didn't get much out of the rest of your.
Embiid played a great game. He did play a great game.
Yeah, and I think you know, we were talking before we started here. Like, if you're Philadelphia, you're almost content staying at six, right? Like, you know, based on what Jusuf Nurkić was able to do in that Portland Boston game, is like, you know what? Let's just take our chance with the Celtics instead of trying to get to five and face a Heat team.
Yeah, and they ended up they lost the tiebreaker. Indiana got the tiebreaker with that win, so that be sort of put them even further away from moving up to the five seed. And I think they were either 2-1 or 3-1. Can't remember if it was already done, but they had played really well against the Celtics this year. As you mentioned, Steven Adams had a really good game against Boston in their first game out, which the Thunder won. Today, the Celtics won a really good game against Portland. Portland was down 20 something and cut it all the way to one in the fourth quarter with a huge comeback, but Boston held them off. But Nurkić had 30 points in that game. You know, the best game Nurkić has played in a long time because he's coming back from injury. And seeing the big guys put up baskets, you know, you could make the argument that their best bet is to stay there. But beyond where their seed is, they got to start playing like a team that's got $140 million payroll, Kirk, because on media day, when I was in Philadelphia, Zach Lowe was there to do a podcast. Rachel Nichols was there to do interviews for The Jump. And I was there to do interviews Sports Center. We were treating it like it was the finals media day. You know, we were like, oh, this team is the team that's going to take over for the Raptors in the East. And they are going to be the dominant team. And like from that day with all of which, by the way, Joel Embiid said with a straight face that he was going to win MVP and Defensive Player of the Year which he's known to make crazy statements, but a guy is going to do that. He plays for a different team.
Yeah.
So, you know, Kirk, I don't know what the answer is for them. And I know that that Brett Brown just spent 4 months trying to figure it out, but he looked like a zombie in the fourth quarter of that game.
Well, Brett Brown's got too many power forwards to play with and not enough guards. You could argue that the four highest paid guys on the team are power forwards if we're supposed to think Ben Simmons, or power forwards are bigs, if we're supposed to think that Ben Simmons is a power forward now. What jumped out to me in that first game in the bubble when they lost to TJ Warren is...
he had 53. They essentially lost.
I've always loved TJ Warren. I was very happy. But I grew up a Sixers fan, so I also root for them a little bit. Their starting guards, if you count Ben Simmons, Josh Richardson, and Shake Milton, combined to make 0 3-pointers and try 2 3-pointers the entire game. They don't have enough shooting. It's all they can do to get to league average 3-point production in a given night. Their front office put Brett Brown in a tough place. Here's Al Horford. J.J. Redick's gone. Jimmy Butler's gone. How about Al Horford? And so now he's trying to make Shake Milton a starting player on the fly. It obviously didn't go so well. I was one of the ones who was seduced by the possibilities because Shake is a good on-ball threat. He's a good shooter. He can make a play for you, but it didn't work out.
It might work out.
That's what I'm saying.
Later games, but
yeah, that's what I'm saying. So they beat San Antonio, let's say, or my Spurs. You know, then they play Washington and Orlando. They could be 3-1 by Friday in the bubble. So you know, one game. TJ Warren, as you said, Brian, a great scorer, had the game of his life. That's going to happen. But yeah, if they can get TJ Warren experiment going, I'm not too worried about them. And like Zach Lowe loves to say, I will not give up on the Sixers yet. They're a hard team to give up on because they're so darn talented.
Yeah, I just, it's more about, I'm not worried about them not getting some wins here. I just had expectations of them just being better out of the gates. And by the way, Bobby, you know, as many people did, it brings up the TJ Warren trade.
Oh man.
Which was one of the, we don't see trades like this much more in the NBA because frankly, front offices have equalized a little bit over the last 5 to 10 years. You rarely see sort of, it happens, but you rarely see trades that make no sense whatsoever. And there's been so much more money has come into the league through the TV deals that you don't see as many straight money deals as you used to. But do you remember the circumstances of the trade that sent Warren from Phoenix to
Indiana? Yeah, I mean, I was sitting in the little, I guess it's the green room at the Barclays Center getting ready for the draft when the trade was agreed upon. And it's one of those trades where, like, you have to double check with the Pacers that it's actually right. Because right. It wound up being a three-team deal because the Heat came in to play because they got one of those picks. But they wound up, Indiana wound up getting three second-round picks. And TJ Warren from a combination of Phoenix and Miami. And all they had to do was give him $1.1 million back to the Suns because that was the minimum that in a trade that you have to include. And Warren's on these really great rookie extension deals. He's got, after this year, another 2 years. He's been injury prone. I mean, that's the big thing, right? He missed a ton of games last year. He's missed, I think it was 115 since he's gotten there. But they basically kind of gave up on the guy because they were looking to clear cap space to try to go out and get, you know, wind up being Ricky Rubio. And you also wind up giving up D'Anthony Melton in a later trade to clear because you needed more room. So you could have had Melton and TJ Warren there in Phoenix, and the Suns' argument will be, well, we've got our wings are loaded with with Bridges, and you know, we drafted Cam Johnson. Well, Cam Johnson was drafted after that trade was agreed upon, and
right.
You didn't know if Kelly Oubre was going to resign. You know, he was restricted, but he hadn't agreed yet. So that is one of the, and we, I think me and Kevin Pelton wrote about it right after the right after the draft. I know Kevin did, but we had to write kind of one of the, what's the most head scratching move of the draft, and that for me that was the TJ Warren trade.
Well, I don't know if the Pacers sort of, the Pacers had cap space and weren't exactly sure who they were going to use it on. And it's always been difficult to get free agents to come to Indiana. They've had a couple where they've done well over the years, David West being the primary one. But so they just absorbed that contract and was like, okay, we will use him. We see him as sort of our free agent signing. We didn't have to bid against anybody. We knew exactly what his contract was. And not only did they got the 32nd pick in addition to, it'd be one thing if they had the 32nd pick. They got the 32nd pick, which is a valuable pick. So valuable, in fact, that they flipped it for 3 seconds. But anyway, not every day do you think TJ Warren is a player that is a foundational player, and he probably will have his up and downs again. But it was a reminder that that guy who scored 53 points was basically acquired with a second round pick for next to nothing. But he was torching the 76ers in the 70s. You know, he hit 9 threes in that game. The 76ers could have done with one of their power forwards that they have hit 9 threes. As a group, they would love for their power forwards to hit 9 threes in a game. Or they don't get them to hit 9 threes in a week. But, you know, because they've put Al Horford into the bench, and his first foray in that bench role, he did not play well. So it's going to be a microscope on the Sixers, and they may end up coming out with that matchup with the Celtics. But if they lose in the first round, it's a catastrophic season, and I can't see any way there's not major changes, which we'll talk about a lot.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
So before we go, I do think we should talk a little bit about this race in the Western Conference for the eighth seed. We've seen Portland and Memphis both have a couple of very tight games coming out. Portland wins against Memphis in overtime. Memphis barely loses to the Spurs today. I think DeJounte Murray hit a three-pointer that essentially won the game in the final minute. And Portland then comes back and has a four-point loss to Boston after the big comeback. And the San Antonio Spurs, Kirk, your San Antonio Spurs, despite not having LaMarcus Aldridge, despite Marco Bellinelli being out, despite, you know, challenges, you know, to sort of stitch things together, come out and go 2-0 and are now in ninth place, you know, in position to at least force a play-in tournament if they keep going.
And they're having fun. They are the equivalent of sort of a Cinderella team. Nobody was talking about coming into this environment. They've benefited from Memphis and Portland and New Orleans not getting off to great starts. But then they've taken care of business. They had a game against Sacramento where they won by 9, and then today a huge win against Memphis. So tomorrow they beat the Sixers. Look out, world. Here we are again. The playoff streak is still alive. You know, and it's fun, Brian, because not a lot of our listeners might know the guys who are starting for the Spurs, but Derek White, Keldon Johnson, their draft pick from last year. They love Keldon Johnson. A lot of Marcus Smart-like vibes. Really aggressive, great teammate, really physical He had a great game. DeJounte Murray and Lonnie Walker. The future is bright in San Antonio with this young core of guards that's out there getting it done in the bubble. And tomorrow's game, hey, I'll plug it. I guess most people will be listening to this on Monday. Tonight's game against the Sixers. Check it out, because this Spurs team is fun to watch. The Sixers have their own issue. But yeah, the Spurs have played themselves into, if the season ended right now, they would be the team against Memphis in that play-in situation. And that's the best they could have hoped for two games into the bubble. So let's see if they can keep it up.
And now it's going to be interesting, Kirk, too, because they had the last two games, they've had DeMar DeRozan playing the four. So you are going to go up against a Philly team that, as you know, is big, right?
Yeah.
So if, but I tell you, I've been writing my off-season articles on, I guess I call it these obituaries on these teams, and
right.
I will not finish my San Antonio one. I've got it's like just blanks in the article, right? And out of respect to that team, I will not do it because I want to see where this this already goes. I've already written my New Orleans. I've already written my Sacramento. I haven't touched Memphis or Portland yet. I've done my Washington, but I will not finish off this San Antonio team.
Well, DeRozan basically playing point power forward because they run a lot of their offense through him. I think he had 11 assists against the Kings. He had 7 assists today. But, you know, Pop, I wasn't even sure Pop was going to be able to come coach. You know, and like, I'll be honest with you, I was saying to myself, should Pop risk coming there and coaching, you know, with the Corona challenges and for a team that may not have a lot. And, you know, Pop has been as energized as ever has stitched together this team, you know, stitched together the lineup as best he can, you know, played like 9 or 10 guys today, played 11 guys, but I guess, 10 in the rotation. And, this is one of the things that, you know, we come to the bubble to see, is to see these things we didn't expect. And so far, San Antonio is one of them. And, the Pelicans sinking and there's a lane there, and the Spurs have taken position in that lane for the time being. They do have a tough week, although after the 76ers, they play the Nuggets, and I have no idea.
Yeah,
I have no idea what's going to happen with the Nuggets. So they're missing three, it took them forever to get their team, but they did have all 15 players in Orlando when the game started, but they have three starters, Gary Harris, Jamal Murray, and Will Barton, who are all out. And according to Mike Malone, they are out indefinitely. And they lost their first game, and I don't think that they're going to play tomorrow. And ultimately, this whole thing about Denver is they only have to have their guys, I guess, when the playoffs start. But, that's an opportunity for the Spurs right there if they can get the Nuggets while they're a little weak. And who knows? I mean, who knows? What's the 20? Was it 22 years?
What's 22 years. I think this would be the 23rd year, if I'm not mistaken, yeah. which would be the new record. They're currently tied for the record.
With the Jazz?
Oh, I should know that. I don't know. Bobby should know it, too. Bobby.
I don't know. We'll say Utah out of respect.
I know that the Stockton Malone Jazz had like 20 years at some point. Maybe it's the Celtics or something. But
it sure ain't the Kings.
True. I think the Kings drought is going to continue. Sadly, but I will say most of these games, especially in the race for that 8th seed, have been highly competitive. A couple of overtime games. We saw the Blazers today again down 27 or 25 or whatever it was. Not give up on that game. Dame Lillard hitting a bunch of shots down the stretch to get them in the game. These are not exhibition games. These teams are really playing. And to watch, you know, the Lakers, the way the Lakers have played poorly offensively their first two games. That's why they're 1-1 and not 2-0. But if you've watched the Lakers play the first two games, the effort level that they are giving on defense, is very impressive.
No, my favorite sequence, Brian, this whole time. I mean, shout out to the NBA and all the teams and everybody's making this happen and playing so hard. But my favorite sequence was in that first Clipper-Laker game when LeBron was busting his behind on both sides of the court late in that game, guarding both Kawhi and Paul George in that pivotal sequence. That dude was trying. And then he got his own rebound in the biggest play of the night. These guys are trying so hard. And you're right, these games already have sort of a postseason vibe to them. Even in cases where the teams don't have much to play for in terms of seeding, their seeding is already locked up in some cases. The Lakers have a pretty comfortable lead, and they're busting their butts out there. But it's been great.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily going to say it's one of the best defensive plays of LeBron's career because we're talking about a regular season game. But the final 12 seconds of that first game against the Clippers, where LeBron successfully denied both Kawhi Leonard and Paul George on the same possession. That's in the file for some one of his greatest defensive efforts that I've ever seen. So I am enjoying watching the highly competitive nature of these games. Hopefully it keeps up. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you, Kirk. And thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope you have a good week. And by the time we talk to you again, hope we have a lot more good basketball to talk about.